Join us on a voyage of discovery with Mohlomi Kekeletso Maobane as we peel through the annals of South African football folklore. Come along for the journey. Show your love. Know your game.
In this episode of Zanzi Soccer Chronicles, we reveal how the world of sports generally and football specifically were affected by apartheid and how this was resisted. Apartheid affected every aspect of South African life, and soccer was no exception. On the 27th of June 1956, T.E. Tonges, Minister of Interior in South Africa, released a statement to the Afrikaans media which partly read, "Whites and blacks should organize their activities separately. There should be no interracial competitions within the Republic's borders. Mixing of races in South African teams should be avoided, and sportsmen from other lands should respect the country's customs as she respected theirs." Within that framework, non-white sportsmen from the outside world should not be debarred from entering South Africa to compete with non-whites. The government would prefer non-white sports organizations seeking international recognition to do so through the aegis of white associations already enjoying such benefits. It would not support non-white sporting divisions by any process of squeezing white South Africans out in international competition. No travel facilities would be granted to people of such subversive intentions. Tonges' policy marked the National Party's first foray into the field of sports in their upset several development program. This, however, was merely the codification of an existing norm. From the onset, segregation was part of organized sport in South Africa, and with football being the most popular sporting code amongst African folk, the game proved to be central in both the implementation of racist policies and the long and difficult struggle to dismantle the inhumane system. Similar to other nations across the globe, African folk have an enduring sporting tradition. This custom was aptly captured by author J.M. Mangan when he wrote, "Throughout pre-colonial Africa, ritualistic dances and games were long performed with a seriousness akin to modern industrial societies and for purposes not altogether different. The striving for status, the assertion of identity, the maintenance of power in one form or another, and the indoctrination of youth into the culture of their elders." The arrival of English nationals marked a new era of sports in South Africa. Not only did the invaders bring new sporting codes with them, most notably cricket, rugby, tennis, and football, embedded in these games were their cultural, social, and class practices, which included racism. The earliest recorded football game in Africa took place in South Africa in the Cape Colony in 1862 in a match between British soldiers and civilians. By 1892, the South African Football Association was established. The constitution of the Football Association explicitly declared that affiliation to the soccer body was exclusively the preserve of people of European descent. This segregationist practice was not confined to football, but enorming the fledgling organized sport in the country. For instance, William Henry Crom Hendricks was regarded as the fastest bowler in South Africa in the 1890s, as proven by his taking 4 wickets for 50 runs for combined Malay 11 against the touring England team in 1892. Walter Reed, who led the tours, remarked that Hendricks would be central to any SA side that might be selected to tour England. A tour of England duly arrived in 1894. And members of the South African Cricket Association and local newspapers advocated for Hendricks' inclusion in the touring side. The plea was started by John Cecil Rhodes. Rhodes' meddling was not an anomaly. The financial and political elites were always awake to the potential of sport as a tool for social engineering. For instance, mining magnate Abe Bailey, Rhodes' predecessor as Cape Colony Prime Minister Leander Jameson, and Henry Knowles occasioned South Africa's initial interaction with the International Olympic Committee. This move to partake in the Olympic movement was driven by the quest to promote peace and harmony amongst Afrikaners and English after the South African War, and disproves the often repeated mantra that politics and sport do not mix. They have been intertwined from the onset of organized sport in South Africa. Subsequent to SAFA's formation, football's popularity grew across the country, culminating in the formation of clubs and associations across the country. By the 1930s, there were 5 different football associations: the White South African Football Association, the South African Indian Football Association, the South African Colored Football Association, the South African Bantu Football Association, and the South African African Football Association. Predictably, only the White Association was recognized by the government of the day and permitted to play international matches and receiving state funding for the development of their game. By 1952, SAFA was affiliated to FIFA, the global football governing body. Incidentally, this affiliation came a year after the African, Coloured and Indian soccer bodies merged to form the anti-apartheid South African Soccer Federation. SAFA was still an exclusively white organization by this stage, and segregation was practiced broadly across South African sports. From 1908 to 1960, South African official Olympic teams racially excluded black sports people from their teams. The inaugural SA Olympic team in 1904 included two Africans, Len Taonyani and Jan Mashian. Their participation was, however, coincidental. Staged in St. Louis, the Olympic Games coincided with the St. Louis World Fair. Taonyani and Mashian were taken to the fair to appear in an Anglo-Boer War exhibition. And thus, the first two Africans to run in the modern Olympics were not athletes, but former soldiers who were dispatched runners during the Anglo-Boer War. In 1919, a member of the touring New Zealand team, A. Ranji Wilson, was not in the country as part of the touring side, which was invited by the South African Rugby Board. In the 1930s, South Africa had to face the problem of black athletes for the first time when they wanted to host the Empire Games, a predecessor of the Commonwealth Games. The idea to host the Games was quickly shelved when it was realized that this meant hosting athletes and officials from Asian and Caribbean countries like India, Pakistan, and Jamaica. Despite these racist overtures, white South Africans continued to enjoy international competition, primarily because international sports bodies, both in terms of administrators and participants, were predominantly white and male. All this time, right up until Donge's passed his infamous legislation in 1956, South Africa did not have a discriminatory sports policy. Instead, white authorities relied on racist laws like the Group Areas Act, pass laws, and Separate Amenities Act to instill and maintain segregation in sport. However, just a year after the Donge's law was passed, events across the continent and the broader African diaspora precipitated the waning of racist practice in international sport. Strengthening of the international sports boycott movement. On the 6th of March 1957, Ghana, formerly known as the Gold Coast, became the first sub-Saharan country to gain independence from their European colonizers. Over the next 20 years, the winds of change blew across Africa, Asia, and the Caribbean, as several other countries also gained independence. Amongst the first international bodies that these independent states joined was FIFA. The football mother body has a one-member, one-vote policy, meaning Africa had the biggest voting bloc in the organization. All this time, subsequent to SAFA being affiliated to FIFA, the anti-apartheid South African Soccer Federation had also been seeking membership to the football governing body. The federation's contention was that SAFA was not the genuine representative of football in the country, as its membership constituted only 18% of players, as opposed to their 82% representation. FIFA permits only one association per member nation, and thus could not have two representatives from the same country. The FIFA Emergency Committee found that both SAFA and the Federation did not constitute national bodies and were in contravention of FIFA statutes. The following year, the first ever international delegation to investigate an apartheid-related matter arrived in South Africa to investigate the state of soccer in the country. The delegation for the FIFA Commission was made of four members, and at the end of their commission of inquiry, they found that SAFA represented a minority group and did not constitute a national association. Ostensibly, FIFA also concurred with the racist body that segregation was a South African tradition and custom and recommended that the two bodies continue negotiating. The reaction from the adversaries could not be more distinct. SAFA changed its name to the Football Association of South Africa and deleted the racist clause in its constitution. This was all subterfuge. The association's management remained all white. Meanwhile, the Federation insisted on equal representation and announced plans to merge the warring Bantu and African groups in their association and form an all-black national team. The issue of South Africa's affiliation was raised once again at the Helsinki Congress 2 years later, and FIFA continued dancing around FASA, instructing the two South African associations to continue negotiating. In the midst of all this wrangling at FIFA, in 1957, to be precise, officials from Ethiopia, Sudan, and Egypt decided to form the Confederation of African Football, Africa's premier football governing body. the democratization of FIFA. On the 19th of March 1960, Mr. Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe of the Pan-African Congress held a press conference where he announced the party he led was going to embark on an anti-PAS campaign on the 21st of March. This was a non-violent protest. In his press release, which was titled Testimony About the Launch of the Campaign, Sobukwe said, "African people have entrusted their whole future to us, and we have sworn that we are leading them not to death, but to life abundant. My instructions, therefore, are that our people must be taught now and continuously that in this campaign we are going to observe absolute non-violence." As planned, the march did commence on the 21st of March, and true to their barbaric nature, the apartheid police saw fit to mow down the unarmed and peaceful protesters, killing 60 innocent civilians. Most were shot in the back while fleeing from their massacre. Hundreds more were injured and arrested. It proved to be a turning point in South African history. The PAC and ANC were banned, and apartheid received its biggest international condemnation at that time. Insofar as sports generally and football specifically were concerned, the ramifications were not only local but global. The sports boycott movement was sparked. 5 months after the massacre, FIFA held a congress in Rome and passed a groundbreaking resolution which stated that a national association must be open to all who practice football in that country without any racial, religious, or political discrimination. FASA were given an ultimatum to abide by the resolution within 12 months or face expulsion. The newly established Confederation of African Football was more decisive in its actions. At the same congress, they expelled the racist FASA outright. FIFA followed suit the next year when it suspended South Africa on the 25th of September 1961. These were amongst the first indictments of apartheid, preceding even the United Nations declaration of apartheid as a crime against humanity. Inadvertently, South Africa and the Sharpeville massacre played a leading role in democratizing FIFA. Soon, other sporting codes followed suit. For an example, in 1964, South Africa was barred from the Tokyo Olympics. And then in 1968, the United Nations General Assembly called for the boycott of South African sport bodies that practice apartheid. And then in 1970, the International Cricket Council barred South Africa. And in that same year, South Africa was expelled from the International Olympic Committee. Many other sanctions against South Africa followed in the next decade. So did the continued support of its racist sport bodies. Unexpectedly, the South African government responded by digging in their heels. The Foster administration decided to introduce what it termed the Multinational Games, which were also known as the Apartheid Olympics. In football, the Multinational Games entailed so-called South African nations coming up against each other. This was a ploy to get South Africa readmitted into FIFA and regain some international legitimacy. There were valid reasons to believe this was feasible, given how FIFA had always been sympathetic to the apartheid cause. FIFA, however, was also in transition, and these changes would have a bearing on South Africa. In 1974, Brazilian João Havelange dethroned Stanley Rau as the head of FIFA, becoming the first non-European head of the organization. Havelange had conducted a shrewd campaign, canvassing for votes in third world countries, primarily Africa. Often with Pelé in tow, Havelange promised more investment in the African game and more World Cup berths for the continent. 2 years later, on the 16th of March to be exact, the first multiracial South African soccer team took to the field against an invitational Argentinian side. South Africa won the game 5-1, with Pirates ace Jomo Sono scoring 4 goals. FASA was emboldened by the match and the tour, believing that their FIFA suspension would be lifted. Plans were afoot to make presentation at the next FIFA Congress that year. The plans were thwarted by an expected turn of events. On June 16, 1976, exactly a month before the FIFA Congress in Montreal, the student uprisings that started in Soweto and spread throughout the country happened, once again exposing the apartheid government for the callous administration that it was. FIFA responded by banning South Africa and declaring that readmission would only be considered when apartheid was abolished. Chapter 3, the conclusion. The FIFA ban precipitated changes in the local game. In 1977, the White League, the National Football League, folded, leading to white teams joining the black NPSL. The NPSL, however, had its own barrage of problems. As explained earlier, South African football had 5 national associations, 2 of which were amongst the Africans. NPSL was affiliated to the South African Bantu Football Association, who at best can be described as apartheid stooges. The organization was headed by the autocratic George Tabe, who also treated the PES as his personal account. Expectedly, a revolt ensued. In 1985, Kaizer Chiefs founder Kaizer Motaung, NPSL Secretary General Cyril Kobus, and Abdul Pamji led a breakaway from the NPSL and formed the NSL. Shrewdly, in 1988, NSL officials traveled to Lusaka, Zambia, to discuss the future of SA football with the ANC in exile. The delegation was met at the airport by ANC head of public relations Thabo Mbeki. At the meeting, it was resolved that apartheid had to be eliminated before South Africa re-entered world football. There was also an undertaking to establish a unitary non-racial controlling body and to integrate football at grassroots level. Over the next 3 years, 13 football unity talks meetings were held, culminating with the formation of SAFA in 1991. Unlike its homonymous predecessor, this SAFA incarnation was a non-racial body, and the following year, it was welcomed into the international arena of football through affiliations to CAF and FIFA. Its founding was the finale of a 96-year period during which many people literally sacrificed their lives to build a football fraternity that, if developed to its full potential, could turn South Africa into a global powerhouse. Unfortunately, the ingrained culture of myopic, narrow self-interest stubbornly lingers onto the local game like a classic Italian defender, stunting its expansion. As the leading figures who led the game during the significant moments of the last 3 decades, the NSL-NPSL split, the ANC unity talks, the formation of SAFA, the founding of the PSL, the World Cup bids, hang up their proverbial boots and the new generation is ushered in, it would be sensible to reflect on the very long journey that has been undertaken to get us to where we are today. My name is Mohlomi Kekiletso Maobane. I am a writer with a particular interest in South African and African football. My view of the game of football is predominantly historic. Documenting football has been, without a doubt, the most fulfilling thing I have ever done. To paraphrase the writer Corey Brian Penn, the game has been good to me and preserved my youth. Not only did it capture my goals, it told me the truth.